Hello and welcome to episode 165 of the Saints Score podcast. Southampton, well, they put us through a roller coaster of emotions, don't they? 2023 started in disappointing fashion, losing to Nottingham Forest in the Premier League, but since then, three games, three different competitions, and three wins. In this episode, of course, we'll be having a look at Southampton's shock win over Manchester City in the Carabao Cup and the most recent victory over Everton in the Premier League. We've gone from 20th to, well, 20th, but hope and optimism has certainly returned this week. There's no Jamie, but I do have Ollie Boast and Mikey Maidment to join myself, Harry Tizard. And Mikey, we've not seen you in a few weeks, so, you know, tell us how you've been.
It's been good. Last week was the fact I was at work, I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
Was it the week before I didn't do it as well? Or there was an emergency one that I didn't do, The emergency one after Forest, wasn't it? Yeah. It was just I had to get up in the morning to go to Havant, so chose not to do it. it's been a good couple of weeks, exhausting couple of weeks with assignments and all that sort of stuff. But all done on that front. So just have a week now where I was about to say I got to chill out, but not really, because Havant work is getting stepped up now. Just a week to sort of get ready for university coming back, really. That's pretty much it.
Nice, Ollie. You've been with us for the last few weeks. Some of them, some hot talking points. You went to Crystal Palace, so that was certainly enjoyable. That's the start of the three-game run. How have you been?
Yeah, I've been good. My dad gave me some feedback on the emergency pod. He listened back and he went, "Oh, I could tell you were angry." And I was like, "Well, I think that's reasonable, isn't it?" But yeah, it's really funny because we end up talking a lot between games and stuff. And a lot of his opinions kind of leach into my brain. So then when we talk about it after the game or whatever, it just kind of sometimes I just say one of his opinions. And I'll get a text in the midweek saying, "Yeah, can you stop saying my opinions on your podcast and presenting them as your own?" So if I do, hands up. But from now on, I'm just not going to mention it. But yeah, I got some feedback from my dad, which is quite nice. But I've been all right. I've been okay. As Mikey said, it's exam season or assignment season. And as I'm working at the moment, I can kind of quietly chill after about 5 o'clock and watch everyone run around and put unsocial hours in at the library and do all-nighters and stuff, and I can kind of smugly sit on the sofa. But yeah, I'm doing all right. How are you, Harry? How's things?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, to be fair. I watched, what's the other game? Wolves versus West Ham today. A bit of a dull 1-0 game. But yeah, I'm in good spirits, seeing the people, seeing the friends. But Ollie, you're not here, so I can see you only virtually, so that makes me upset. But I'm happy because Saints, well, we all predicted, well, bar Jamie, because he's, ever the optimist, that Saints wouldn't make it through to the next round of the Carabao Cup, the semi-final. But, well, we're just wrong. And that's the one time where I'm happy to be wrong. City, they beat Chelsea and Liverpool, last season's finalists, to reach the quarterfinal. So clearly, they wanted to win the competition again. They'd won 8 of their last 8 quarterfinals, but not their 9th. Mikey, what are your opinions on the game? Because normally we speed through the first one if we have to review 2, but this one we've got to have a look at.
Yeah, it was really nice watching players wanting to run in behind. I think that's like the main thing. I know I didn't get to say what I wanted to say after Forest, but that's what I was going to say. Is the long ball doesn't work if A, you don't have a target man, and B, you don't have runners off him. And that was the issue against Forest. So we had Adams, and Adams, as much as he's not tall, he's big, he's strong, he can get his body about. And we know that that's his best side of the game, is that creative side, that first touch, and it's not in front of goal. While, if you don't have anyone running beyond, that's then the issue. It's no longer the long ball. It's actually just the process after the long ball and the knockdown of not getting the bodies around. And so you could see there was the startings against Forest, but as soon as we go 1-0 down, it sort of works that way. City are a completely different... They are so happy sitting high because they've got Kyle Walker to run in behind and cover. They've got Edison to come out and sweep. They're so happy being higher up the field. There are the spaces to exploit. So instead of going into a target man, we could just go direct over and into a runner in behind. And that's what Sekumara provided. And then I think the first goal sort of showed that, is that he was willing to run behind. And fantastic piece of movement for it as well. But yeah, it was sort of like, on reflection, yes, he didn't play very well, and they really struggled to play the ball out the back, and I think that was sort of down to Guardiola tinkering a little bit too much. But yeah, I think we came out with a plan. We executed it really, really well. And to be fair, Jones needed that result. Like Palace at the weekend, you know, like you can say it's a good win, but we didn't do it particularly well. But in the game against City, that was the performance that Jones needed to show, actually, he does sort of know what he's doing.
Yeah, the win against Crystal Palace, everyone was happy, but everyone sort of felt that we were fortunate. Ollie, there was no fortune about our win against Manchester City. Maybe their team lineup gave us some hope to start with, but what are your overall opinions on the game?
Overall thoughts, the main thing that I want to know is what he said to the players, or the tactical setup, what differed between the Man City game and the games we've seen before, because everything was right on the front foot against Man City, which, I mean, was a something that I was definitely welcome watching. And we took advantage of City being poor. Mikey mentioned it a lot there. The fact that their midfield didn't really get hold of the ball. They were making sloppy passes. There were players that had particularly poor games in their side. You had people like Kyle Walker out of position, which I didn't really see the reason. With Man City's strength in their side, the fact that he was putting people in their slightly unnatural pit, like, you know, Kyle Walker could play at centre-back, but in a four centre-back, again, Mikey's right, just unnecessary tinkering for one of the strongest, you know, sides in Europe, probably. It's very interesting, and it didn't really click, and we took advantage. I think one thing of note for me was Ward-Prowse playing in the 10, how much that kicks on our pressing, because a lot of the time you see some players not sure where to go and press and start and initiate that press, but Ward-Prowse just presses all the time. He's got such a good engine. So he's just going at them. And if you see Ward-Prowse coming from the middle pressing, it means the wingers go up and the striker goes up as well. And it just seemed that we were so much more efficient, so much more energetic with him higher up the pitch. And it's amazing because we've also been last season saying how well he's been doing in a defensive position as well. But he can really do both now, which is a really welcome sign. That was my main takeaway, just Ward-Prowse in that 10 and what difference it makes.
Mikey, do you think, you know, similar to what Ollie said there, that Pep Guardiola sort of took us for granted that, you know, 20th in the league, not he doesn't normally do these sort of things, or at least against us in Champions League finals and Champions League semi-finals. He likes to do relatively silly things. But I saw their team, I saw Walker there, I saw Sergi Gomez, you know, he's had a decent start, but I wasn't necessarily that confident if I was a City fan. I saw Phillips, you know, you've got to give him minutes somewhere, but it felt like there was something that, you know, if we started well, we could rock them a bit there.
Yeah, I think to be fair, I think the main issue with City building up the back for the first half especially was, did you see the positioning of João Cancelo throughout the first half? He was so narrow. He was basically standing directly next to Calvin Phillips. So when you give a pressing side like us a smaller area to press, all of a sudden, you've got problems. And it really, really shows in the first goal. João Cancelo is really, really tight on the right-hand side. And it didn't allow Calvin Phillips to turn out and actually play the ball. So I think it really did become a problem for City, especially in the first half. And it made our pressing a lot, lot easier. Because João Cancelo coming inside allowed Adam Armstrong to nearly play as a third striker. And that's where you want him naturally, is literally just playing off of a striker. So, yeah, it was just a really, really good all-round performance. I mean, you need to get a little bit lucky against City, and the fact that, it was the first game that they didn't have a shot on target since 2018. It was the first game that Pep Guardiola's lost in a quarterfinal of a competition. He'd done 15 out of 15 before then. Like, it's an unbelievable result for us, and it was thoroughly, thoroughly deserved.
You know, their team, it was strong, very, very strong, but something that I felt we could get at. But then I looked at our team and I was like, I wasn't sure about Mara, I must say. Mara and Armstrong up front. Gineppo, you know, he's indifferent to say the least. Diallo certainly shoulder. A lot of the time he's come off maybe at half time, maybe in the 50th minute. And, you know, I don't think, Ollie, you were too sure about the starting team either.
No, we both had our reservations, didn't we? But I'm very much happy to be proved wrong. I saw Gineppo against, I believe it's Forest, and I thought he put in a really poor performance and really made me question kind of longer term future at the team, which is a real kind of testament to how bad that performance was. I was thinking, why have you signed him on a new deal? What's he going to give to the side? He looks like a player who doesn't even know what he's doing, and then puts in a really great performance against Man City. So sometimes you have to give those players a second chance. I thought defensively we played really well against Man City. Obviously, we proved that, keeping a clean sheet against them and making sure we reduced their shots. But looking really comfortable in a four, which going into the games after Nottingham Forest, I was really keen that we did stay with a four. And it's interesting as well, I believe Nathan Jones mentioned it today in his press conference, or one of his very many press conferences that he did this week, because he must have done about three in a week. But he mentioned that the players themselves mentioned the reservation with the five at the back, but at least this time it didn't come out in, you know, exclusive newspaper stories. It came from the actual manager himself, and he said, we've had that discussion as a team, and they mentioned the reservations and we went with a four. And I'm glad to hear that, because it's the Man City game just proves it gives such a good benchmark, not only for things like defensive performances against Haaland and De Bruyne, who came on later in the game, but just the levels consistently throughout the performance, whether that be energy levels, pressing, finishing. You know, we can see that we can do it now, and that's the benchmark that we've got to set it at.
Yeah, we took the lead, and what a finish it was by Mara, someone that has been relatively quiet. You know, he did a great assist against Leeds, but sort of went off the boil since then. But that's always going to happen when you're in a new league, especially with a player that's that young. Lianca, he makes the most of Gomez in a bit of a short pass, but it's a great ball into the box, and Mara with a great finish. And I sort of spotted earlier in the game that, you know, when Mara spurns a shot over the bar, it was him and Lianca once again. Mikey, do you think that's something that was planned before the game? You know, Lianco stepping up quite a lot and then getting the ball into the box. Mara, the great finish. And what sort of confidence do you think that will give him?
I don't think it was planned that Lianco would do overlapping runs. I don't think that was sort of the idea of the tactic. But it shows Lianco's willingness to be aggressive. It shows Lianco's willingness to step out and take a risk. And sometimes it comes off, like the assist for the first goal. Sometimes it doesn't. About 10 minutes later, he came out really aggressive, and Grealish just let him walk, like literally let him go by. And he just started running into space afterwards. So sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. And that aggressiveness, intercepting that pass from Sergio Gomez, exploiting the space that, I mean, we'd already caused three turnovers of the ball in that sort of little interchange period. We caused that turnover from City because they were panicked. They didn't realise how much we were going to come at them. And yeah, it can only give Mara confidence. It was such a good finish. Like, first time, don't really think the goalie had a chance. He just absolutely cracked it from the edge of the box, and it's a really good ball into the box, really, really good strike, and very happy for him because he had a wonderful performance on Wednesday night. He was fantastic. The amount of yards that he put in chasing balls down and chasing players, and it's what you want from a lone striker like that, is someone who is willing to chase and willing to sort of be a part of the press. And yeah, he was a really, really good team worker, and he deserved that goal.
We've talked about the tactics of the goal, but Ollie, what was your feeling when that went in? Was it, you know, this is the first goal, still plenty of time, or was it just pure elation at that moment?
I was going mental. I was watching it in my house. I was shouting. I was jumping up and down. I was throwing things. I could not believe it. The reason I went so mad is because of the expectancy of putting a performance in against a bad team and then putting in an incredible performance against a great team. It's literally the epitome of the lowest of the lows and the highest of the highs. It was incredible. Such a great moment. If you're in that stadium and you did go to the game in the midweek, you got out of work early or whatever, and you said, yes, I am going to go to this, even though there is a chance we might get battered, and you did go there because I know it wasn't a massive turnout, but that is your reward there. That's the credit to you to go there and still cheer on the players after the form that we've been on in our home form against top sides, then that's your reward, and you get to enjoy that moment in person, because unfortunately I can't go to them because of where I am at the moment. But yeah, the fans deserve that because they've been turning in, week out. And I don't know, did any of you two go to the game?
Of course. Absolutely, of course.
I did.
There you go, Harry. Hopefully it was, what was it like in the stadium when that went in? Did the roof lift off?
Oh, no, I was in block 42, so about 20 seats away from the Manchester City fans, and you could just, the goal was like right beneath us, and it was just, I didn't see Mara celebrate because I was too busy looking to the person to my left, too busy looking to the person to my right, high fives left, right and centre. And yeah, one quickly became two. You know, Manchester City, when we beat them 1-0 ages and ages ago, it's when Che Adams scored his first goal. That was Mara's first. And then Gineppo got his first in 22 months. It sort of feels like we're normally the team that gives a player their first goal in ages. Andre Ayew to be one last season, Solly March to be one this season. But then look at him now, scored against Everton, scored two against Liverpool. So his confidence is certainly up. But what a goal it was by Moussa Gineppo, Mikey.
Oh, it's really weird goalkeeping. But yeah, it's an unbelievable strike. Really, really, like, to have the...
Better than the Shane Long one against Aston Villa back in...
No.
Back in the day.
But probably more important, but no, not in my opinion. But no, like, to be able to come off the back of what, the sort of 20-month spell that he's had, where he doesn't really know where he's going to be, and there's talk of him leaving in the summer, and then he starts the season well under the boss that signed him, and the boss that's put a lot of faith in him, and all of a sudden, new contract comes in, and he gets sacked about a month later after the new contract comes in. You just don't know, and he didn't really put a good performance in against Forest. He sometimes comes across as quite weak and not really effective and not having a final ball. So to be able to sort of pick up that ball, drive into space, which is another important thing that we actually did during the game, like actually have the willingness and the ability to drive forward into the space that we see and exploit the space that we see, and have that ability to then look up. And I don't know if people have seen the replay. He looks so surprised that, like, he looks up and goes,
"It wasn't the only one."
Words. And he just, like, lifts the ball over the goalie. And I mean, Ortega's had a bad one there. He if he wasn't at fault for the first one, he's at fault for the second one. Like, it's an unbelievable positioning. But he's got to pull off the strike, and he does it. And it seems like Gineppo can only score worldies after the first two that he scored instantly joining the club. So I don't know. Yeah,
there's a lot of pressure on that strike as well, because I think it was a 4v3, and he had an overlap on the left hand side and on the right hand side. Which, I mean, considering the keeper's position, it's pretty much a cut across the keeper, because he's further out than his penalty spot, which is so strange. But Gineppo's looked up, and like Mikey said, you can almost see him double take on the replay that he's that far out. And it's a beautiful dink, isn't it? It's not even a little chip underneath. He's put some curl on it, hits the back of the net, and you can tell those players about 1 second away from going mental that they don't get the ball. And then he puts the top corner, and they're like, "Oh, yep. Okay, perfect. You can do that then." Great, got the goal. And then suddenly it's that. The beautiful thing about that is it relieves so much pressure, because although we have beaten Man City 1-0 before, we have a tendency to, which I think's natural, sit back and sit on what you've got. Whereas this meant it was so quick, we didn't even have a time to think about it. Bang, 2-0. And then if you do start sitting back and trying to kill the game, you've got a lot more of a cushion there, haven't you, to actually keep on and make sure you hold on to your lead. But we didn't even need that. Didn't even need it. Clean sheet against Man City. What a way to get confidence up, eh?
Yeah, I mean, the players weren't the only ones probably telling him no. I saw him line it up and I was like, "No, please don't." And then I just tried to go over Ortega's gloves and I just, it was just absolutely crazy. So Mara made it 1-0. Gineppo made it 2-0. And I don't know about you, Ollie, but it sort of felt like we had the Southampton back that we had a few seasons ago. Just in this one game, you know, anything can happen for the rest of the season. We've got plenty of games to go, but it felt like we had a battling team, a team that can come up against any other team, cause them a problem, be energetic, be threatening, causing upsets. Is that how you felt?
Yeah, also, I think one thing that can't be understated is having St. Mary's back on the player's side as well, because a lot of the time, the more and more losses they see, the more frustrated they can be, and fans pay their money, it's only natural. Those frustrations come out to the side as well, sometimes directly at the manager, directly at the players, and it can wear down both sides, really. The fans aren't up for the game, the players aren't up for it either, whereas now upset completely gets those players on the side. You know, we had the Chelsea game early in the season, has that upset feeling, and this Man City one has it, but almost double this time. It's such a lift and brings such an energy and boost to the team that I think it puts in a perfect position to go to Everton on the weekend as well. It was great. It's great to see. And, you know, I'm always going to feel slightly jealous when I'm watching it on the telly or watching the highlights. And I kind of wish, trying to spot my little seat and see, I wish I was there, but I'll take the positive that we got the result.
You talk about putting us in the perfect position. Something that Nathan Jones said, that me and Ollie sort of questioned, and Jamie when he was on the podcast and the emergency one, about words are easier to say than actually do. And he talked about having a team that we can identify with. Was that performance that one that we could, at least the first 45 minutes anyway, because I remember at halftime thinking, if nothing else, we've got a brilliant 45 minutes to talk about. Is that something that we can identify with, going, this is the team that's ours?
Oh, I think it's really important that going at a Man City side, they're not faultless, they're not robots, they can make mistakes. And fans pick up on that as well. If you can see a player trying their absolute best, they're fully determined to go and get that result, then the fans feed off that as well. And you're right, you have that belief and you back them. Making one mistake or seeing Man City make that uncharacteristic sloppy pass, you go, oh, hang on, we've got a chance here. How much that stadium lifts when you get one corner or you press something down and you force a throw in or something like that, it lifts the fans up and that just gradually builds. And I do think the fans helped the players along in those last 10, 15, 20 minutes, because we've had it in points where the stadium feels cagey, but I can only go off watching it. Man City didn't feel that dangerous, and we'll talk about it probably in a minute. They brought on the big guns. The big guns came on. And the collective groan when Haaland is announced that he's coming on the pitch. But we didn't really have that fear. We kind of had that bit of that home advantage that we haven't really had in a while. A lot of people have come to St. Mary's and thought, oh, this is a place where we can pick up points. But it was nice to have that feeling that it's a tough place to go to. And Man City, Pep always talks about how we're such a tough side to go to. And sometimes you're like, yeah, give it a rest, will we, Pep? But we kind of proved it again. And the next time we play Man City, he's going to be saying how we're so, so good and so, so dangerous, because, you know, that's what he gets when he comes to St. Mary's.
Yeah. I mean, talk about Guardiola. He wasn't messing about at halftime, making that triple change, taking off Walker, taking off Gomez as well, the players that, you know, from the positions they're playing, you know, probably shouldn't have started. But nothing changed apart from, you know, Alvarez did hit one just wide. And how important was it for us to be lucky for once, Mikey? It feels like that's something we've lacked this season, you know, apart from the Crystal Palace game, of course. But it feels like luck's going on our side, because if that goes inside the post, game changes almost immediately and they're on top. But it felt like when that goes wide, hold on, we've got a bit of a chance here.
It was Alvarez's first strike on goal, wasn't it? That was his first attempt. So, you do have to have luck in these games go your way. I mean, if that's Haaland running onto it, or if you talk about past Man City teams and you've got Aguero running onto it, it's probably in the back of the net, isn't it? But Alvarez, still a kid. I mean, he's had an amazing World Cup, really, really good World Cup. And the fact that he's a World Cup winner at the age that he is fantastic for him. But yeah, he just it's it, didn't he? It literally just came off the wrong side of his boot and scrambled wide. But, you know, you do have to get your luck in these games. And thankfully, we had it. And Bazunu came big when he needed to. I mean, I know Alvarez didn't quite get on the end of that one across goal, but he got on the end of it and he was nice and big and strong. And, you know, not a shot on target for City is an unbelievable statistic for us to come away with.
And Ollie, do you think it was just a bit of an off day for them? It felt like they gave the ball away a lot, like you said earlier in the podcast. Mm. They just couldn't get their rhythm going. And at those sort of occasions, you have to make them work, because, you know, I guess that Manchester United did beat them today. Brentford beat them before the World Cup. But teams like City, they don't have off days very often.
No, because Pep demands the absolute highest that you can get. But with a lot of changes, people that might have not had many minutes, things like that. We saw it against the first game back after the World Cup and how sloppy some of the passes that we were seeing were, because you don't have that match sharpness. And I think that's exactly what happened with Man City, really. Yeah, players there that not only hadn't played with each other, but hadn't played a full tempo Premier League side. And those mistakes were evident. Evidence.
That's
sorry.
In a minute, Ollie. Come on.
Yeah, sorry. No, so I think you just got some of the players there that were a bit rusty, and we punished it, which is great to see.
I mean, Ollie seems eager to talk about Everton, and we'll do that in two questions time. Mikey, I've got one for you before I go to Ollie. And it's about Bazunu, because you're someone that, you know, I feel like you've backed him quite a lot. He didn't have a shot to save, but it sort of felt like against Manchester City that he showed that his other qualities in the game were, you know, of a good level. It felt like he could kick, you know, well, very, very well. But also he came up to claim the crosses high and low. The one that comes to mind is when De Bruyne flashed it across the box and Bazunu got there before Haaland. And that clean sheet, yes, he didn't have a shot to save, but he had plenty of other things to do as well in that 90 minutes.
Oh, yeah, no, you talk about, like, his ability to rush out. Like, that's something that we didn't have in a goalkeeper before. I mean, Forster could hardly move by the end of his time here, unfortunately, for him. But, yeah, like, the keeper's ability to rush out of goal and be able to sweep out behind goal and know when to do that, I think, is really important, especially nowadays in this sort of high-line, high-press, offside trap kind of world. If you get it wrong, you got your goalkeeper to rely on now. I think Bazunu is—he's turning that corner. Hopefully, fingers crossed. He's made a couple of really, really good saves against Liverpool. I think one of them's got nominated for the save of the month now. That's a new competition in the Premier League or something. but yeah, Bazunu. I think he's really turned the corner. And I mean, he didn't really have to do much at all against City. He didn't. But the things that he needed to do, he got on and he did well. I think, I know we said Everton in a second, but I think again against Everton he's done well in the circumstances that he's found and managed to pull off a couple of decent saves. So yeah, I think hopefully this is him turning a corner. I know am I allowed to say Pompey fans? But a couple of Pompey fans from last year were saying that Bazunu, he took about 3 or 4 months to actually get going and then finally he'd started growing into the role. So maybe we're seeing that now. Hopefully it is.
And against Manchester City, we had 11 fantastic performances, or I guess 13, 14, you know, including the substitutes. But is there anyone that really stood out to you, Ollie? Because for me, Chiletasar had a great game. Lianco, great game. Diallo, great game. And when Mara played, even though, you know, he had one shot on target, it was the one important one and he pressed well. Is there anyone for you that really stood out?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for me as well, Lavia looked the best midfielder on the pitch, which is amazing because the amount of money that Man City invested, but have this youngster that they're willing to let go to us. You almost can't believe it. He looks so composed for a young lad. Younger than all of us, which really puts it into perspective.
Don't say that. Please don't say that.
But so calm, so press resistant, happy to turn out, play the ball, roll the man if he needs to. Just exactly what you want from your defensive midfielder. And when he went down, my heart dropped because I thought, please do not be injured again. This is the last thing we need. And when he went on the subs bench rather than down the tunnel, again, so relieved that he was fit and ready to play for the next game. But yeah, can't understate how important he is for our side and gets us playing, wins the ball back, calm, composed, and got an amazing future ahead of him. I'm so glad we get to watch him in a Saints shirt and just enjoy it while we've got it, because he's destined for great things, I think. Brilliant, brilliant player.
Absolutely. In a podcast coming to you soon, we'll have a look at the double header against Newcastle, one semi-final of two legs. And hopefully we get to talk about a final. But let's not go too far just yet. Right, 3 days after the win against Manchester City, Everton, 18th place in the league. And it felt like even though we did beat Manchester City, we had to follow it up with at least a positive performance and positive points against a team that, you know, similar to us, lacked in confidence. And we did, 2-1, coming back from behind. And it sort of felt like, you know, you look at the team that we put out there, not completely contrasting to the one that played against Manchester City, but Mara, Gineppo, the two players that made the difference at the end of the day against Manchester City, didn't start. They're taken out as part of three substitutions. Mike, do you feel that's something different that Jones does than Ralph? It sort of felt at times that if someone had a good game under Ralph, even if the system wasn't right, because, you know, look at Manchester City, look at Everton, you play two completely different systems, he'd stick with the same thing. If it's not broken, don't fix it. Doesn't matter who we're coming up against. Not always, but it felt like a lot of the time. Is that good to see? That it doesn't matter how good you did last game, it helps. But if you're not right for my system in this game, if you're not part of the tactical plan, you're not going to start.
To be honest, I think it's partly that. In the fact that I don't think Mara would have been as affected as Che Adams in this game. I don't think... I think Adam Armstrong possibly could have been. But like you said, I think system-wise, it made sense for the rotations to happen because you've now got Che Adams, who we're going to... Everton are going to be a bit deeper. So Che Adams holding the ball up, getting those flick-ons, and we need a man in between, in behind, and getting in front of the back line. So I think, yeah, Che Adams coming in makes sense. I think Elianuzzi in for Gineppo makes a little bit more sense. We're going to be on the ball a little bit more. We're not going to need the athleticism up and down. We're going to need a little bit more control. So I think Elianuzzi coming in made sense. And I think when you've got a Dozy fit, I think he's always going to start for us. I think he's one of those tricky players that you don't know what he can do. He can pull something out of nothing. So I think you start him over Adam Armstrong at the moment. So the changes were fine. I found it quite funny that even though I don't think it was a massive system change, I think we still started in that sort of back four, but it still turned into a back five defensively. I think it still rotate like that. A couple of times Ralph tried to do it, and we're trying to do it now. Ward-Prowse kept playing up high like he has been doing. Lavia was giving a little bit more way to roam, especially in the second half. He was a little bit higher. And a Dozy coming in off the left-hand side. So I don't think there was really much different tactically. I think it was just having Adams up there instead of Mara allowed us to play in more than play over, because we knew that it was going to be difficult to do that against Everton. And I mean, I think, to be fair, the first half was quite even. It was quite tetchy. And I think the first goal going in for Everton was a little bit of a... It was going to break for one side at some point. I think it just opened the game up a little bit more, and it allowed us to sort of, especially, I mean, scoring that early on in the second half allowed the game to sort of play on a level again. I mean, it felt like we dominated halfway through the second half, and that's where we got our best bits, and then decided to sit in late on with the changes in the like 80th minute type thing. So yeah, I think the way that we set up tactically made sense. The changes made sense. And as much as like I saw on Twitter before, like people going, oh, I wish Mara was starting. I thought he deserved it. The amount of running that those bodies did on Wednesday night, some of them just were, like, I don't know if you saw Adam Armstrong walk off the pitch. He was done. He was he was absolutely done. I think same with Mara and Gineppo. I think it made sense because I think they would have probably done some of the most running that... possibly was, but then you talk about the man who does the most running in the Premier League, and he was unbelievable again against Everton.
Yeah, I mean, we'll certainly get on to James Ward-Prowse early, and I mean, a bit later, and how much he's developed, just manager for manager, really, or at least how he's been used differently. But Ollie, you were able to catch the game. What did you think of it?
Yeah, really cagey. I felt sick the whole way through. I felt like I was about to give a presentation. I had a real horrible knot in my stomach the whole time, because the weight of this game was just multiplied by the Forest one. And the most important thing for me, because I noticed it at Forest, is if we turned the Everton fans, how much of an impact that would make. I mean, the hostility with the players coming in and all the flares going off and the police escorts in. The players knew they were up for a game already. The Everton fans made that clear when they set off fireworks at the wrong hotel. So they knew they were up for a game already. But you have Everton, who can't even bring their own owners because of how, you know, hostile they are. And it's like a danger to their safety or something like that. The statement that they made. So those fans were going to turn if they saw something that they didn't want to. And Mikey made such a good point. The fact we got back into the game in that second half so quickly completely changed the game. Because if they made it 10, 15 minutes into the second half and they were doing okay, I mean, they had chances as well in the second half. then they could have completely closed us out, started running down the clock, putting changes on, going more defensive and making it really difficult for us, keeping their fans on their side. The fact that we got to change the fans for the whole of the second half made a complete difference to the game. And yeah, so I was so pleased when that went in because I thought, right, we've got a real chance here. We can go at them, which is what we did.
I mean, yeah, sometimes when you have those sort of situations with the home fans not necessarily loving their new own or just current ownership, sometimes it can go against you because it feels like they've combined together. The atmosphere is going to be on a different level to any other game before. And then when they go 1-0 up, look, it's another corner goal. If you want to hear our opinions about corner goals, you can listen to any of the last 15 podcasts because, once again, it's not necessarily a free header in the middle of the box, but Elianusi, part of zonal marking or something I don't understand anymore just because of 3-4 different managers in the last however many years and we still concede the same sort of goals. But like you said, it was important to get back into the game immediately. I didn't realise how quickly it was within mm-hmm. the first minute or two. Mikey, I know, you know, within the first minute, an entire system change probably didn't happen, but were there any other tactical tweaks that could have done? Because, you know, when we played against Leeds, we conceded immediately and then that put us on the back foot for the rest of the game. Yes, we got a point out of it, but if we didn't concede that early, we could have, you know, gone on and won it. But it was only little changes that Jones made at half-time because 1-0 down, sometimes you've got to change a few things, even though our first half wasn't anywhere near appalling.
There was only one real tweak at half-time that I can remember being talked about, and that was instead of Lianco being a right-back, Salisu became a left-back and they put Carl Walker-Peters on the right instead of the left. That's the only change that I really remember them talking about. And I don't know if it's down to the fact that Damari Gray was more positioned on that side, or maybe it was like Jabe Tarkowski because he's a little bit slower than Ben Godfrey and maybe not as athletic. Maybe we could cause a little bit more problems down there because I think he's a performance that didn't get talked about in the City game that much. And I think like his running forward and his ability to get forward really made a difference in that game. I think it probably did in this game as well when we switched it across. I think it probably doesn't work as well because I don't think Salisu's as natural in a wide position as Lianco seems to be. But I think it's just also because Lianco seems to not care. He doesn't matter where he is on that football pitch. He's just going to play however he wants to play. So I think having that made us a little bit more offensive, but maybe a little more unstable at the back, which probably allowed for Everton to create a few more chances in the second half than they did in the first. But having that attacking threat down the right hand side really did make a difference. It felt like Everton had to push across on the left more, which allowed for greater space for a switch of play, and that's where Adam Armstrong got fouled for the free kick that Ward-Prowse scored for the second one. And just trying to open them up a little bit more. And I think the issue with Everton is we knew that breaking them down through the centre was going to be really, really difficult. They've got Onana, who is a wonderful, wonderful central midfielder, really, really good. And when I was watching Belgium in the World Cup, they weren't really impressive, but he was one where you thought he genuinely made a difference. To Belgium during the World Cup, he was fantastic. And against us at St Mary's, I remember he just being so big and so difficult to stop. And then you've also got the likes of Idrissa Gueye, who played for PSG and is a really good ball-winning midfielder and really good, like, solid midfielder in there. And Iwobi, who's probably on the best form that he's had in a very, very long time playing football. So you've got a really, really strong midfield there. And they had Calvert-Lewin back, who he's not overly effective, but in the box, he's a goal scorer. And we know that he can get goals and different types of goals. So it made that a little bit more difficult. I think we were somewhat surprised in the first half that Kyle Walker-Peters was facing up against Seamus Coleman. And that one-on-one battle actually just became a two-on-one because Ben Godfrey would come out and sort of help Coleman with that sort of pace deficit that there's there. But yeah, I think that change, moving them round and getting Walker-Peters towards James Tarkowski more, probably just unsettled Everton a little bit more. And of course, we were slightly more open at the back. But yeah, I think that change made a difference. And as I said before, that goal Ward-Prowse managed to get just after half time just allowed for that change to have a little bit more of an impact and put Everton on a little bit more of an edge than they were before. Because I sort of like Ollie said, Everton are quite similar. We were never as bad, I don't think, owner-wise, but Everton were, you could tell that they were similar to us, that when the crowd started getting on their back, they turn quickly and then they really get on the players' backs. And it can really cause, and I mean, I heard the atmosphere along the radio the entire time, and especially at the end where you got like the little bit on Sky Sports Soccer Centre, that sort of thing. Where, yeah, towards the end of the game, you get to see the celebrations of the managers and the players at the end of the game, and the atmosphere. Oh, it's got to be horrible playing in that atmosphere as an Everton player. It's just awful, and just a really bad situation for the club and everyone around it.
I mean, it does sound cliche, but Frank Lampard probably was ripping his hair out. He's probably done this great halftime team talk about being 1-0 up immediately. Kyle Walker-Peters, like you said, back on the right-hand side, flicks it over to Adams. He does a great knockdown to Ward-Prowse, gets past Godfrey, you know, puts it past Pickford. And it just shows you, you know, Adams, someone that, you know, had a bit of stick in recent weeks, but it gets an assist to his name, that, you know, he's not necessarily a goal scorer, and he's not a second striker in that sort of situation, because he's playing as a one up front for quite a while. But he did the knockdown, and Ward-Prowse gets on the end of it, and you know, he does the rest.
Yes. it's very interesting that Ward-Prowse, in after the game, mentioned his excitement to get up further. And it shows he's got him in his locker that he can. It's a lovely finish. If you've seen the highlights, which I'm sure you guys have, beautiful composure. It just gets caught under his right foot a little bit when he does the fake shot, but it's still enough to open it out, and then he just puts it across Pickford, who can't do anything really. Really nice composed finish. The through ball is more targeted. It's not into an area, which it seems sometimes our through balls are. That's the really frustrating ones, when it goes straight from the centre back over their centre backs, but then just trickles out for a goal kick. I think that's the long balls that the fans get frustrated with, because it's not even really targeted to a player. It's just kind of put into a place. Whereas this one was on Che Adams' head. He did really well to get up there. The flick on's brilliant, because it brings it straight down for Ward-Prowse to do the rest and puts in the back of the net. So really nice, well-worked goal. And yeah, can't underestimate how much of an importance that is to get back in the game. Sets us right on the foot on how we want to impose ourselves for the rest of the second half when we go on to do it.
I mean, James Ward-Prowse sort of at the start of the season was struggling, whether that's Ralph, whether that's something else, I'm not too sure. And when you see a change of manager, sometimes you see a change of player, or, you know, players. When we did the podcast previously, we sort of pinpointed certain players that we wanted to see something out of, but Ward-Prowse wasn't necessarily one of them. We went for the Aribos, the Armstrongs, the Laviers, where you go, do you know what, I want to see something different from that player, even if they're doing all right already. And under Ralph, who is more of the battling midfielder, just trying to get the ball back. Sometimes he'd chuck in a set-piece goal, not always, you know, from open play. But it feels like he's been changed again. This time he's been changed to a 10, Mikey.
Well, I said after the Lincoln game, I think, when we started getting a bit more control of it was when Ward-Prowse was deeper, and when and that's where I thought that's his best position. If you play him in a six and he can spray balls around the pitch, then you can get the best out of him. But when you're in a side that doesn't really like the passing around and the keep ball at the back, and like to play almost like heavy metal football, like Bundesliga type, high pressing, that side of thing, you need someone who's going to be able to do that. And Ward-Prowse has shown how adaptable he is over his entire career at Southampton. I mean, he looks so natural as that almost second striker in that 4-4-2 flat system that teams pressing. He looks so natural doing it. It because of how well we known that he adapted to Ralph. Like, I think there was an element of when it was Hughes to Ralph, there was an element of like, what is a James Ward-Prowse? And under Ralph, we've seen him become a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more nasty. I think under Nathan Jones, because of the character that Jones is, I think Ward-Prowse can get nastier. I think he will get nastier. And him having that want and that ability to sort of go and know when to go and know when to press allows everyone else to go around him, because he's then the trigger. And we know the technical quality of Ward-Prowse. We know he's not the quickest. We know that he's probably technically isn't the best player in the league, but his game intelligence is unbelievable, and his knowledge on the game and where to be and what positions to put himself in is incredible. And we know that his effort, his determination, his work rate are the three pillars that he has that makes him such a good leader and such a good worker and such a good player. So, I mean, you don't get that good at free kicks from like just being born with it. That is hard work and determination getting into that position and getting that ability. So, yeah, he's just fantastic. He's really good, isn't he? He is really good. And I think it sort of shows that when he was given that new five-year contract, I think it was last summer, wasn't it? It was 5-6 years he was given. And he was the first Southampton player to get paid six figures on a weekly wage. No one made a fuss. No one made a fuss about it because everyone at the club knew, no, he deserves that. He is so key to what we need and so key to keeping this club in the Premier League that we will pay him what he wants to get paid and he will continue being Southampton's captain.
I mean, yeah, second goal, a free kick. Of course it was. You know, Mikulenko tries to flick it away. He doesn't get it. And it feels like at that point that Pickford thought that Mikulenko was going to get it, goes over his head. There's nothing you can do about it, Ollie. And that's the goal that got us our first win ever since. It's 1997, before any of us were even born.
Yeah. Amazing. Just world-class quality again when it comes to a dead ball situation. It actually seemed like he snuck the ball back a little bit further than where the original challenge was. Because I was watching it and it was closer to the box, but he likes to get it up and over. So I think he took a couple of steps back and, you know, got it placed where he wanted it. And from then on, it's a perfect 25 yards. It's basically, I think he's more clinical with a free kick than he is a penalty. It's incredible the way that it's the muscle memory that he has. It's the exact same technique every single time. He says he models it on Beckham, but he's got his distinct style. He wraps that foot round, but gets... I could spend hours analysing it, but incredible the fact that he's pushing towards a record of one of the greats. And he was even doing interviews saying that there is a little bit of pressure in the back of his mind that he's got to... He obviously wants to try and get this record of his idol, and that is going to be in the back of his head. Well, it didn't get in the way today. He's put in that hard work, like Mikey says, and it just means that when he gets his opportunity, it goes where he wants it to go. And we needed it. We needed that bit of quality. And I think the players know what they're doing as well, don't they? When you've got someone of that quality and you say it, you see it day in, day out, you get that push in the back, you are going down, and it gets us the win we need, and we're walking away with 3 points.
Mikey, that's James Ward-Prowse's 16th Premier League free kick. The question is he the best free kick taker ever?
Ever? I don't know, because I don't know all the free kick takers in the world ever. But as a specialist in a skill, there aren't many better than James Ward-Prowse. Like you can tell, especially at St Mary's, or even like if you're away support, if you've got a ball that's dead around 30 yards out, or anywhere closer to the goal, you're thinking, we've got a really good chance here. Like, you don't usually get it with some players. Like, if you see another player line up for the ball, you go, there's probably, I don't know, about 10% chance of this going in. Or perhaps you're going, like, we've got a really good chance. And you can tell. I think there was that video back when, I think, Southampton were away to Leeds. And it was like his 13th free kick or something like that. And the Leeds fans were whistling like it's a penalty. But it is that extent that Ward-Prowse is just that good. And it's all down to him. Like that just diligence to actually just keep practicing, keep working, keep going at it. And there was a Academy series that came out on, I think it was like CBBC or something like that. And there was the Academy series that came out and it was at Southampton's Academy. And Ward-Prowse just went, well, this is how you take a free kick or whatever, did it. And they just went, like, keep going until you stop scoring. He scored about 5 or 6 in a row before he, like, hit the post on one of them. And so, like, and that's the exact, like, if you're going to give away a free kick to Southampton, to James Ward-Prowse, you don't give it away there. Like, you don't give it away 25 yards out on the edge of the box. You don't do that because more than likely it's going to go in.
I mean, all fairness, at the start of the season, he didn't score because we just didn't get free kicks on the edge of the box. That's what it felt like anyway. And between the two Southampton goals, Dominic Calvert-Lewin hit the bar. Holgate, Ben Godfrey hit the side netting. A bit of luck there. And, you know, we win 2-1 in the end, Ollie. How much did Jones deserve that? Because a lot of people gave him stick, including me, including you, including Jamie, including all of the Saints fan base, or 99.9%, because we don't know everyone. But how much did he deserve that sort of win and his third in a row?
Well, he stayed up till 3 o'clock watching how to get the best of Everton, and it's paid off. He puts in the work. He backs himself. And it's really nice that it has come off and it's paid off, because there was always something lingering, kind of being, yeah, but. So we played against Palace and it was like, oh, yeah, but it's not in the league. It's not against a big team. It's not clean sheet. Goes to Man City, beats a big team, keeps clean sheet. Then he does it in the league. It's all things he's proven his point now. And there's a 50% of the games we've won. And we're on 3 on the bounce now. If you look at it in major competitions, it's a great platform that he's built. And now he's got the players on side to impose what he wants to do now as well. So if he continues to make correct decisions and the players backing with that as well, it gives us an amazing place to try and now move onwards. And yeah, the win took us from, as you said at the start, 20th to 20th. But it doesn't feel like that if you've won 3 games in a row. You have that confidence and you will just focus on the next game and getting as many points as you can, which will be Aston Villa is the next one. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Yeah. Right, so that's the thing we're going to talk about right now. The final talking point of this episode, Aston Villa, Unai Emery. Someone that I feel like it's the stick that people beat Southampton with, the fact that when they got Unai Emery, we got Nathan Jones, and Aston Villa under the Spaniards, well, Man United beaten, Brighton beaten, Tottenham beaten, Leeds United, well, they got 3 points against them as well on Friday night. Let's just not talk about the Stevenage one, because that ruins my point entirely. Mikey, what do you expect from Aston Villa under this new regime?
I expect it to be a better game of football than the away game that I went to earlier on in the year, because that was actually horrendous.
I wrote that out of my mind. I wrote that game away.
There was the 1-0, and I think there was about 2 shots on target each. I don't think there was anything more to it. It was an awful game of football. What are you going to expect for Unai Emery? Solid team. Cool. Really, really well defensively organised. 4-4-2, you're expecting... I don't know, a European run. Like, that's what Emery does, isn't it? He doesn't do much more. but yeah, Villa are going to be a very difficult side to beat. And I was really surprised about, I don't know how much you watched the Leeds game against Villa. Leeds opened them up quite a lot and then just didn't finish their chances. It was like either like an Emiliano Martinez save, who of course is a wonderful goalkeeper and coming off the back of a really good World Cup, and like he's someone who gets Villa out of trouble when they need to. But you're expecting quite direct, a lot of attacks through the centre, and repeating patterns. Those patterns I don't know, but they're repeating patterns, and hopefully Nathan Jones picks them up. But yeah, Leeds really broke through them quite easily. So they seem to be a team that are effective in front of goal right now and quite effective at defending their goal even when they give the chances away. But they're a team that we can get at. Like we saw against Stevenage, I know they rotated the side very heavily. I think Benderek was involved. That's how heavily they rotated the side. But their ability to be able to get at, and they're a counter-attacking side. And of course, we know from being a counter-attacking side, the last thing the counter-attacking side wants is the ball. So if I expect them to be sitting not deep, but deeper than what Man City would, probably similar line to Everton, maybe slightly higher. I would expect them to be playing with pace on the break. You saw from their first goal against Leeds, it was all about speed on the break. Leon Bailey and Kamara breaking forward together and runners off them. And you expect them to be dangerous on that counter-attack as well and have that ability to really break things down. So I think it will be likelihood quite a similar lineup to the one that came in today. I think it'll be quite a similar system like the one from today as well. I'm not dating the podcast at all by saying today. But, you know, I think that will be quite interesting. I think also set pieces as well. With a player like Lucas Digne, who can put the ball into the box very effectively, I think he could be quite dangerous, but he came off the pitch injured against Leeds. So whether he's going to start or not, I don't know. But the most surprising thing, I've just looked at their line. Ashley Young's revitalized his career at Aston Villa. It's just a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Sorry. But you expect them to be very creative, very direct, good, strong defensively. And wanting to play on that counter-attack like Emre likes.
I mean, you talk about that Leeds game and the research that I was doing beforehand. I think Jesse March actually said that it's their best performance in the 11 months that he's been there on the back of a 2-1 loss. So hopefully that gives us some sort of encouragement that they can be there to get at. We've talked about the Villa side of it, Ollie, but what do you want to see from Southampton in this game? Obviously, a fourth consecutive win,
but
a bit more than that.
Of course, yeah. As much as I love Ward-Prowse scoring free kicks, it's another dead ball situation which we score from. It was really nice today to see attacking movement, which caused a goal and a bit of individual brilliance from Ward-Prowse. I love it when we counter-attack and run quickly. I love it when we play quick, short passes, which move us up the pitch. And I love it when we press. So if I can see those things on display against Villa, then I'll enjoy myself watching. And as long as we work at 100%, then whatever we come with at the end of the game, you have to hold your hands up and say that's the best we could have got. And that's only when you see fans' frustrations, when you think if we tried harder, we could have done better. But hopefully we'll see the Saints fans on side as well, because at St. Mary's, like I said previously, saw a great result there, and hopefully we can see that again. But starting off early, starting off quick, will mean the fans will get on side immediately, and seeing some good football, some quick football, pressing as well, always gets the fans on side. So if I can see any of those things next Saturday, then we're off to a good start.
And finally, before we get to the score prediction time, which is everyone's favourite time, Mikey, what do you want to see from the Saints boys?
I want to see our defensive stability from set pieces improve. I think that's probably the key element here. I don't think we really gave Everton clear-cut chances. I think there were chances from like deflected efforts and balls into the box, but there was nothing where they played through us and really were effective. So I think that's something that is a definite for improving on is goals from set pieces and our ability to defend them. And I want to see, I don't really know, just the same, really. Like, and as much as people, like, I know Ollie just said it's another dead ball situation. I don't care. Like, if we score from six free kicks and we win 6-0, that's fine by me. And it also means Ward-Prowse will get the record. but look, however we need to score goals, we'll score goals. And let's just make sure that defensively we're sound. And I think the most important thing is that when that ball goes long over the top, someone chases it. I think that's the most important thing, because I think what really gets on the fans' backs when I was there at Forest, it was a long ball into space with no one chasing. And that becomes frustrating because you're sort of like, well, you just wasted possession there. But if you get someone chasing in behind and getting on the end of these balls, then all of a sudden it becomes a good ball and people don't mind anymore. So, yeah, I think that's probably the two most important points is if we can defend from set pieces better, happy days. And if we can get those runners continuously working hard and getting on that ball at the end of it, fantastic. Let's keep doing that.
Right. Finally, with a little explanation on the side of it, what is your score prediction for Aston Villa versus Southampton in the Premier League? I'll start with you, Ollie.
I think it'll be slightly cagey. I don't think there'll be that many goals, unfortunately. Do I see us winning? I think it'll be a draw. I think it'll be a 1-1.
Yeah, we lost there 4-0 last season, so hopefully there'll be some improvements on. Oh, no, it's a home game, isn't it? It's a home game. We won 1-0 last season. Adam Armstrong with it. Mikey, will there be a repeat this season?
Hope so. I think I'll go for a 1-0.
Adam Armstrong again?
Hopefully we can I don't know, with the goal scoring record at the moment, probably Ward-Prowse will get on the score sheet. But no, we'll who to say? Do you know what? Why not? Adozie will get his first goal for the club.
Oh, so that'd be lovely.
Go, I'm going to go 1-0 to Southampton.
Do you know what? I like the sound of that. I'll say 2-1. I think we'll come back from behind again. I think we've collected 11 points from losing positions this season. So that's quite special from us. So yeah, I'll go 2-1. And yeah, so
I don't want us to keep coming from behind. Like, just go ahead and just stay ahead. I don't need these heartbreaking sort of heart racing moments where we're going a goal behind and having to come back every single time. Let's just keep going goals ahead instead.
Sure, I'm jealous of Brentford because in the Premier League, I think they've went ahead 19 times and never lost. That's just not fair.
That's not the right way to do things.
It's simply not fair. That the fans just don't have any stress. When they go ahead, they know they'll at least get a point out of the game. Hopefully later in the season, we can...
Boring.
They can go ahead. We'll let them go ahead and then we'll do it. We'll get the 3 points against them. Anyway, that is the end of this podcast episode, and it's a lot happier than some of them this season. We had a look at Southampton's victory over Manchester City in the Carabao Cup, and hopefully we can get to the final, beat Newcastle over two legs, but that's for a future podcast. We also looked at Southampton's first Premier League win against Everton at Goodison Park since 1997. And it feels like our first win in the league since that time against anyone, to be honest. But we're still 20th. We've got a lot of optimism. And also Aston Villa in the league as well. Looking ahead to that one. And hopefully by the time we next speak to you, it'll be another victory in that. And next week we'll also talk about the FA Cup game against Blackpool. And we're doing well in the cup at the moment on all fronts. So hopefully we can do a cup double and stay in the league. That's the ambition. Anyway, no Jamie this week, but it has been myself, Harry Tizar. I've been joined by Ollie Boast.
Thank you very much for listening.
Mikey Maisman.
Goodbye.
Remember, please leave us a review on any of the platforms you're listening to, and we will see you next week.